trust you to end up like this. You're gonna drown like a rat in a sewer if you don't—
Shut up. Just think, damn you, think!
I would never have seen it if I hadn't hunched down, clapping my hands to either side of my head and thwacking myself a good one with the knife's hilt against my temple.
Ow! Forgot I was carrying the damn thing!
My attention snagged on the wall directly over the chunk of stone Sephiramel had laid me out on. The mosaic there was blues and greens, and it stretched up in a passable imitation of a door. A round wheel of yellow light where the knob should be. The edges of the pattern shimmered. Illusion rippled, and my heart leapt up into my throat. I didn't stop to think.
Yes!
I scrambled across the room through the water rapidly coming under the door, leapt up, and smashed into the wall full tilt, knocking myself half senseless back down onto the rectangle of stone.
Dante, you idiot!
And with the utter lunacy of the desperate, shell-shocked, and insane, I reached up, my claw tips scraping against polished bits of stone and touched the yellow circle. It felt round, firm, and real under the screen of demon illusion. I used it to pull myself to my knees. The water was lapping against the base of the stone chunk. I twisted my wrist. The shell of illusion on the door, a perfect piece of demon magic, either a cruel mockery or an aesthetic utterly divorced from practicality, folded aside as the door swung open, the golden orb at the apex of the dome beginning to dim as its light spilled through and touched stairs.
Going up!
I began to scramble on hands and knees, the worn edges of the risers biting into my flesh. I managed to get my legs under me. I ran. The stairs were narrow and dark, golden light from below fading as water lapped behind me. The knife hilt began a warm pulsing. Sick, fever warmth spilled up my arm.
Whatever this has taken from Sephiramel, it's feeding into me!
I knew that soon I was going to push my body past its limits, muscles tearing free of their moorings and my brain pan filling with blood from burst vessels.
Danny, you're running blind! Slow down!
I couldn't. Darkness was rising with the water. Before the last glimmer faded and the dark wrapped close and soft as cotton wool over my eyes, the clutching of claustrophobia began in my chest.
No, there's not enough air. If I don't drown in the flood, I will in the darkness. Focus. You have to focus. You have to...
I tripped and fell, my head hitting the wall.
Damn it, get a hold of yourself.
I lay on the stairs. Claustrophobia descended on me. Sheer terror wrung out what little sanity I had left. It was like Rigor Hall again, like the Faraday cage in the basement where I had learned to fear dark, closed spaces. My left shoulder flared with soft heat. It was so warm I expected it to glow as I stared up at the ceiling, stone edges digging into my hip and the back of my head.
Wait a second. I can see.
I shifted. And the light shifted too, dappling the stone. The light moved again as I tilted my head.
It's my emerald.
It was glowing fiercely. Green light danced as I moved my head, slowly, watching the play of color against the stone. Spectral illumination. Far too much to come from the one tiny gem in my cheek. Bathed the steps. My tat writhed madly on my cheek. An itching so familiar and so comforting, tears pressed hot against my eyes. I blinked them away.
Get up, Danny.
I don't want to. I want to lie here and rest.
If you stop moving, you'll drown. Get up. Move!
I can't. I just want to rest. Just for a moment until I can find enough energy to move. Until the terror goes away.
Then Lucifer's already won. Are you gonna let him win? You might as well admit it, Danny. You've only got so much left in you. You're only human. There's no shame in admitting you're beaten. He's the devil. He'll win. All you have to do is lie here.
Get up!
I was lying on the steps like a beaten animal, cowering in a corner. The knife hummed in my hand.
Get up, you bitch! If you can talk, you can breathe!
I tried. My legs refused to move. The muscles were shaking, quivering as nerves rebelled, drunk on terror.
That's right. Just lie there, sunshine. Choke a little bit when the water reaches you. It'll all be over soon and you can rest. Here in the dark. Forever.
Just lie there, sunshine. It's all over.
Like hell it is!
Fresh fingers of water caressed my soaked jeans. I jerked away, finding fresh strength as the knife hummed in my hand like a high-voltage cable. The world turned gray, light from the emerald set in my cheek bleaching stone. I made it up to my knees.
Ooh, look at that. You can move after all.
Shut up!
The mark on my shoulder spilled a wave of strength down my skin. Each step was torture, working against the weight of childhood fear. My knees felt shattered, my thighs on fire, my neck steel-strung cables. I climbed up. I kept going until the stairs vanished. I emerged into a long, low corridor lit by orange aranflu strips. Claustrophobia eased. I stared at the shapes on either side of the hall.
What the hell?
Stacked on either side of the hall were bones. Great pyramids of skulls over neatly piled femurs. Pelvic bowls stacked. The arched shapes of what I realized were ribs arranged aesthetically. Finger bones mortared into the wall. Smaller bones sticking into crumbling concrete.
Sekhmet-Sayas. Catacombs.
Skulls leered at me, their empty eyes, holes of madness.
They're dead, Danny. They can't hurt you. Gonna stand there and gawp all day?
Anubis.
I stopped the prayer short.
On my own again.
Don't think about that now. You have other credits to fry right now.
I put out a hand to steady myself. Touched a stack of bones that spilled from their careful teetering and puffed into dust on the way to the floor. The splinters that reached the stone broke.
What's happening?
I blundered down the aisle of bones as Hagia Sophia tolled in distress overhead, her walls singing. The name rose from the smoke in my head.
He's in trouble. He needs me.
I didn't argue with the certainty. I just stumbled forward, wearily, with all the speed my exhausted, aching body would allow. The long hall gave onto another bigger chamber, an ossuary. Strips of aranflu lighting and a few dim bulbs burned out overhead. I stumbled through other passages, following a faint, indefinable pulling.
Jeff is nearby, and he needs me.
I had the knife now. I was going to save the day.
Well, at least half the knife, better than nothing, wouldn't you say, Danny?
Oh, shut up.
I almost ran into a dead end, a blank wall barring my path.
Damn.
I turned back, retraced my steps, and found a long, sloping corridor going up.
Thank the gods!
There was decent lighting and signs in Merrickan, Pharisee, and Greshy. I'd somehow found my way into the part of the temple set aside for tourists. The letters blurred and ran together, but I glimpsed enough to tell me the main part of the temple was down the hall and to the right, behind a massive blue-painted door that loomed up. I started up the hall, dragging my right leg a little.
It doesn't matter. Nothing matters except the fact that Jaffermel is on the other side of that door.
The door shook.
The Kinslayer will fight to his last breath. The prince's minions are numberless even when weakened, and even a killer such as yours may eventually fall.
Has Sephiromel done what he threatened?
Something hit the door from the other side. The door sagged.
Last thing I need now is the damn door to fall on me. Hurry up, Valentine!
I reached out with both hands, intending to shove. If the mage hinges were damaged, they might not open.
Doesn't matter. Jeff's in there and he needs me.
I coiled myself. I exploded forward. The door flung away. I was driven down to one knee. The knife vibrated in my hand, force pouring into me, beating back my exhaustion. The inside of the dome was soaked with bloody light. McKinley drove a winged hellhound down to the floor, his left hand clamped in its throat as Van unloaded plasbolt after plasbolt at it, missing by a hair's breadth each time as it twisted. Lucas skipped to the side and fired on an imp. Its bald, hairless baby face contorted. Other imps writhed on the floor as rotting fluid gushed from mortal wounds. Jaffer Mel stood before the high altar, his hands clasped behind his back as he regarded the demon in front of him. The left side of his face was black with mottled bruising, something I had never seen before. Behind his slim, dark shape, Leander crouched, his katana an arc of brightness held in the guard position, spitting blue sparks as runes twisted in the steel's heart. My arrival halted everything. Corpses littered the inside of the temple, stinking and running with brackish fluid as demon flesh decayed. My attention centered on the feathered demon as it turned fluidly to face me, drawing itself up and up and up. It had to be at least 9 feet tall. I'd interrupted a hell of a fight. Twisted shapes of dead demon flesh were everywhere. Some with a mass of hideous legs and others vaguely human-shaped. There were also imps, their claws blackened and their faces grotesquely puffed. I stayed on one knee, trying to get in enough breath as the demon in front of Jaff turned its piercing, silvery eyes on me. Feathers ruffled, each one edged with a dark, steel gleam. It had a slim, ageless face, built like Jaffermel's, lean and saturnine, long nose and thin mouth, winged dark eyebrows. The hair feathered into wisps so fine they lifted on uneasy air.
All eyes on you, Danny.
Or maybe they weren't looking at me. Maybe they were looking at the knife, its finials stretching out and clasping empty air, my hand fitting against its hilt as if it was made for me. The wooden weapon keened.
Get up, you stupid bitch! That thing is threatening Jaffermel!
Fury poured through me, a rage red and deep. My legs straightened. The half-familiar voice whispered inside my head.
Burn. Burn them. Make them pay.
Everything vanished but the enemy in front of me and the need to make him, whoever he was, pay. In blood. My left shoulder woke with a crunch of agony, power flushing along my aura and hardening. Jaffermil's strength filled me. I held the knife in the way my sensei taught me. Flat against my forearm for slashing, the pommel reversed with its claws digging into my wrist. I gained my feet in a stumbling rush and threw myself forward.
Valentine!
The demon and I collided. The knife rammed through muscle and bone. Flame ran through my veins. I was made of it, this fire. And if it escaped me, the world would burn. The only thing scarier than not caring was how good it felt. I held the silver-eyed demon on the knife, ignoring the sudden blooming of pain as it clipped me a stunning blow on the head with one taloned fist. Close enough to kiss. I had called upon Sekhmet, the fierce one, and she had answered.
Burn!
The demon reached for me, its claws flexing as it prepared to kill, even with the blade buried in its ribs.
I can't kill a demon!
Jaffermel arrived. He tore the demon off me, the knife pulling free of my fist. I went flying back. The heavy shield of Jaffermel's aura over mine, blunting the force of my fall as I collided with Van. We went down in a tangle of arms and legs. I struck out with fists and feet.
No!
Van threw his arm around my throat and McKinley descended on us, trying to hold me down as I thrashed. Jaff pounded the demon, ripped its arms off. Sagged in Van's hands.
Jesu Christo, Mother Magna, Jesu Christo!
Is she all right? Tell me she's all right.
I'm fine. Get off me.
I wanted to say that, but my mouth wouldn't work.
He's bleeding bad. Get over here.
Leave me be. I am well enough. Dante.
Van's grip on me fell away. McKinley settled back on his heels.
She looks okay. Valentine, are you all right?
Get the fuck away from me.
Jaffra Mel appeared, leaning on Lucas. Terrific bruising blotching his face. He slumped wearily, black demon blood dripping from his right arm, which hung useless and limp at his side. His long, elegant golden fingers clasped gingerly around the knife's hilt, almost flinching away from its touch. His hair was wildly mussed, and his eyes burned almost wholly green. Lucas looked like hell, too. Shirt torn and bandoliers missing, his pants ripped and bloody, garish streaks of gore painting his face and torso. He was wet to both knees with fluids I decided I didn't want to think about. McKinley was oddly pristine, but his fishbelly paleness was marked by dark bruised circles under his aching eyes. I didn't like McKinley. I had never liked him, but the unguarded pain on his face was enough to make me pause. He wore the same expression Sephramel had, only diluted by his essential humanity. His silvery hand twitched, falling back down to his side, and the Hellesfront agent and I shared a moment of profound communication. "You don't know what I've lost," his eyes said, and I knew it was true. Jaffra Mel went down heavily to one knee, with little of his usual economical grace.
"Dante, are you hurt?"
"Am I hurt? Look at you!"
I reached up. His left hand came down. He pulled me up, hugging me as best he could, one-armed. I buried my face in the warmth of him.
"Are you hurt?"
"Am I hurt? Sekhmet Sayas, let's see. I was dragged through hell, betrayed by my god, left in Jersey, and finished up nearly being drowned by a demon with a bad haircut."
Hades.
Leander was pale, his shirt soaked dark with sweat and various types of blood. He slumped against the hover's hull, the dusky glow of Constantinople falling under Knight's wing, receding over his shoulder through the porthole.
Hades. I never want to do that again.
We'd just managed to escape the temple before the aid hovers arrived, drawn by the noise and ready to dump plurifreeze to put out the fire. Our hover was still at its landing pad under a carapace of demon shielding, and as soon as we approached it, a tall shape with a mop of dirty blonde hair had melted out of the shadows, greeting me with a wink and a grin that exposed the tips of his long canines. Tiance, the Nichtfren Hellesfront agent, was in the control booth, piloting us like a vast, silent fish.
"We do not appear to have been followed."
Everything seemed hilarious now, in a darkly morbid sort of way. I had my sword and my new rig back. Futushin shoved through a stiff loop on the rig's side. I couldn't settle enough to sit down, so I stood restlessly near the hatch, turning the heavy wooden weight of the knife over and over in my hands. It hummed happily to itself, a low moan sending a pulse of unhealthy warmth up my arm.
"If using the thing makes me feel like this, I'm not sure I want to."
I stared at the gleam of oil against its carved grain, too close and fine to be of any tree growing in the real world.
"What kind of trees grow in hell?"
"God's wounds. Winged hounds out of hell, and one of the greater flight. Christos, we would have been toast if you hadn't been there."
"Then it is well I was."
"Yeah, well, I don't want to die just yet. Van owes me for our last round of vid poker. But what does it mean? Is it him?"
"I do not know if we can blame the prince for this event."
Jaframel's hand was still clamped over his bleeding shoulder. It looked like it hurt. I had tried to bandage it, but he'd simply, gently, pushed my hands away and pointed me toward the largest cabin for fresh clothes.
Who else?
Van lay flung on a plasteel and canvas couch, one arm over his eyes. He seemed none the worse for wear, even if he wasn't nearly as neat and unmarked as McKinley.
He is not our only concern. The Prince has lost his hold on egress from Hell, and the Greater Flight are settling scores. The one now dead had a grievance with me, and rather a large one.
Jaframel peeled his fingers away from the bloody mess of his shoulder and peered at it. His coat was shredded, and the bleeding wouldn't stop.
So which one was that?
He is dead, and it matters little. Suffice to say, I spoiled one of his toys some time ago, and he sought to return the favor. Our task now is to reach the roof of the world.
Why won't your bleeding stop? To see the bloody mess made me feel unsteady in a whole new way. He had always seemed so invulnerable before.
It will stop soon enough. Some of us have poisoned teeth as well as claws, and I had those more fragile than myself to defend.
After complaining so often that he didn't tell me anything, it was nice to see him trying. I lifted up the knife and stared at it. The finials were still writhing like a live thing. It was heavier than it had been, too.
I need a sheath for this.
My eyes stuttered back to Jaframel's face.
Are you all right?
You should have asked before. Sekhmet Sayas, Danny, you selfish bitch.
Yep. I was feeling more and more like myself all the time. Whoever myself was.
I will be well enough. See.
The seeping had finally stopped, thick black blood sealing away the wound, but so slowly, far more slowly than usual.
There is no need for concern.
What if I'm concerned anyway?
I looked back down at the knife. The wooden weapon hummed.
He tore this thing out of me, didn't he?
The silence turned thick and dangerous. Jaframel looked at the floor of the hover as if it was the most interesting thing he'd ever seen in his life. His hair shielded his eyes, falling forward in soft, ragged darkness. It looked like bits of it had been charred away.
It is customary for a fallen to care for any Hedera in distress, especially in such distress as yours.
I realized my left hand was rubbing at my fresh shirt over the scarred tenderness of my belly. Revulsion swept through me. The rage running through my bones rose, flushing my cheeks with heat. I tried hard to appear disinterested and failed miserably.
Just what distress would that be? I'm only curious, Jaff. What was in me?
Something to bind you and your fallen to Lucifer's will. Sephiramel was adept at treating Hedera, who suffered from...
I shut my eyes, opened them again.
Well, everyone here saw it except Tian's.
You can say...
Miscarriage. Only in this case, it was somewhat different. It was a Jarak. The word means worm.
Worms? I've been dewormed.
Jaff studied the floor, his shoulders down but tense.
A Zarak. The word means worm, but he treated you for miscarriage. Well, you're an adult. You're tough, right? One of the top 10 deadliest bounty hunters in the hegemony, a combat-trained necromance, an all-around ass-kicking wonder.
So why were my knees shaking?
Had your body not rejected it, Lucifer would have a means of controlling you. You would become a vessel for his will, as well as one of his least attractive progeny. The separation, when it bursts free of incubation, is energetic.
So that's why he did it. To control me. Use me for bait. Use me against Eve, and probably against you.
Yes.
If I turned just a little, I had a clear shot to the bedroom door. I tacked out across industrial flooring for that harbor.
Dante.
I'm all right. I just want to be alone for a bit. Call me when we get where we're going.
I could feel his eyes plucking at me. My shoulder ached with velvet flame, his name on my skin crying out to him.
I don't want this goddamn knife.
Just thinking of that satiny wood touching my palm again was enough to make the nausea triple. I made it to the bedroom door.
Lucifer wanted to use me as bait. I hadn't been fulfilling my purpose fast enough. In Sarajevo, Eve had left before the devil showed up, and he hadn't really wanted me to kill any of the escaped demons. I was just a pawn, dangled out in shark-filled waters to see who bit. And if the bait isn't drawing your prey fast enough, you reel it in, readjust it, and throw it back out there. He put something in me. A worm in my body. In my body.
Eve. I turned aside from what had been done to me and fastened on Doreen's daughter, like a shipwreck survivor latching onto a piece of driftwood. She'd been taken to hell as a little girl.
What had Lucifer done to her? To make her so determined to rebel? Had it hurt? Had it scraped her insides out and made a black hole inside her head?
It bothered me. It bothered me a lot. If I thought about what he had probably done to Eve, the closest thing to a child I might ever have, then maybe, just maybe, I could get away with not thinking about the violation of my own body.
Kill him for Eve. For yourself. Sweet, hot flame. The undoing of the world.
I slid down with my back to the door. My legs sprawled out in front of me.
Make him pay. Make him pay.
You can. If Jaff is on your side, you can do this.
There was no way out now. When I thought about it, there didn't seem like there had ever been any way out. There's an old Scion joke taken from a Zenmo koan. It goes like this. Before they discovered Chumalongma, what was the highest mountain in the world? The answer, of course, is another Zenmo joke. The one inside your head still is. Normals don't get it, but pretty much every Scion who hears it cracks up. The laughter is bright and unaffected if you're a child, somewhat cynical and world-weary by the time you hit 18, and turns knowing when you're older. When you get to the combat-trained Scions, the bounty hunters, cops, and government agents, we don't just laugh. We laugh as if our mouths are full of too much bitterness to be contained, because we know it's true. There aren't any geographical features that can stop you. It's the faults, fissures, and peaks inside your own skull that bring you up hard and short. Chumalongma is the mountain's name. Great Mother Mountain. She rises in pleats and tooth shapes from the rest of the Himalayas, a low, thundering bass note of power throbbing from her rock and ice. She is more than a mountain. Generations of belief and thought have made her a symbol of endurance and the unconquerable, no matter how many climbers have climbed to her top unaided by hover technology. It's still an act of faith to scale her. Our hover drifted through a night sky starred with hard points of brilliance, unwashed by any city glow. The mountains around the Mother are a historical zone in the Freetown Tibet territory. No cities allowed, precious few hovers, the infrequent temples lit by torchlight, oil lamp, and candle flame. I stared out the porthole, resting my forehead on chill, slick plasglass. Jaffra Mills stepped into the room. I hadn't moved for a long time, watching the shapes of mountains as we circled the mother of them all.
I'm all right. Another lie. They're coming fast and thick these days.
He was silent for so long, I closed my eyes, the darkness behind my lids comfortless.
I do not think so, my curious.
I should think up a cute little nickname for you too, you know. My bitterness surprised even me.
You could. I would answer.
You always do. Somehow.
I have not been kind to you. What I have done with the best of intent. You must believe me.
Who the hell else do I have to believe?
Look, Jeff, it's okay. You don't have to.
Meaning?
I'm not in any position to throw stones when it comes to good intent.
Meaning?
You came for me, even when you didn't have to.
Meaning?
Someone else hurt me, not you.
Meaning other things, too. Things I couldn't say. There might have been a time when I could have opened up my mouth and spilled everything, but that time was long gone. Besides, he probably wouldn't understand anyway, even if I could say it. I had been reduced more than once to incoherence by his inability to comprehend the simplest things about me. I didn't hear him cross the room, but his breath touched my hair. The warmth of him radiated against my back.
We do only what we must. You more than most, I think. May I ask you something?
If you want. He paused. His fingers touched my left shoulder, skating over the fabric of my shirt. My chin dipped, shoulders unstringing, losing their tension.
Maybe I can relax for just a few seconds. I need it.
We were in a holding pattern, drifting quietly over the tallest mountain in the world, except the one inside my head.
Sounds like someone loading ammo out there.
When his arms came around me, I didn't pull away, but neither did I lean back into him. His wings unfolded, closed around me, heavy and silken. They cocooned us. He was always so warm. I relaxed, all at once, against him. The darkness behind my eyelids turned kind and comforting. He held me carefully, resting his chin atop my head.
I thought to ask your forgiveness. I thought to ask if you regretted our meeting. I also thought to ask.
But he said nothing more.
Tell him the truth, Danny, if you can admit it. Tell him you wish you'd never seen his face. Tell him you wish he and Lucifer had just left you alone instead of fucking you up so bad you can't even think straight. So bad you can't even talk to your god anymore. Go ahead, Sunshine. Deliver the bad news. It might even hurt him. You're always so proud of telling the truth and keeping your word. Look where it's gotten you. Tell him.
I'm glad I met you. Don't be ridiculous. The lie sounded natural. For once, I delivered an untruth, and I meant it while I said it, too.
Forgive me?
If you forgive me.
There is nothing to forgive.
His arms tightened. And for a moment, his wings pulled even closer. I hadn't cried since Gabe's death. Not so long ago, really, but it felt like a lifetime. His body tightened the merest fraction. I knew that tension in him, had shared it so many times. It was a subtle invitation to have a conversation in the most intimate way. Skin on skin. The only language we ever truly shared. I flinched. Jaframel froze. I struggled to contain the urge to flinch again. He had never hurt me in the private space of our shared bed. It was ridiculous to think he ever would. Still, my body turned cold. The tears changing to ice on my cheeks, a black hole where something had been torn out by the roots opening in my head, my body robbed of its integrity.
Don't think about that. Don't.
I'm sorry.
How many times had I apologized for my inability to respond, my coldness, the echoes of trauma lingering in my head blocking me from accepting even the smallest gift of touch.
Jeff, I...
No. Leave it be, Hedera.
What if I can't ever go there with you again? What if I can't ever stand to have anyone touch me again?
It does not matter. You will heal. When you're ready, we shall see.
His fingers combed through my hair, infinitely soothing.
What if I'm never ready? What if I don't own my own body ever again?
Then we will find another way. But first, we have a prince to kill and our freedom to accomplish.
Jav, I feel dirty, unclean, filthy, as a matter of fact. And I can't frame the question I need answered most. Does that matter to you?
He was silent for a long, long moment.
I did too, my beloved, when Lucifer broke me to his will. I healed. In time, you will.
His arm uncoiled from my waist and he stepped away quickly. He retreated to the door. I felt every step in my own body. I kept my eyes tightly shut.
Oh, God!
You mean he...
It is one of his preferred methods. We shall be landing soon. Bring your weapons, and especially the knife. I regret there is not more time for rest, but we must move.
Tian's held the hover steady. McKinley stared over the Nicht friend's shoulder at a wilderness of rock and snow. I was busy going through my rig one last time, making sure each projectile gun, plas gun, knife, and stiletto was in place. Van had produced a sheath that fit the half-knife. A nice bit of leatherwork with two straps for attaching it to a rig. The knife's malignant force was uncomfortable against my left hip. But better there than in my bag where I couldn't get to it if another demon showed up. I ducked through the strap of my bag and settled it on my hip, scooping up Fudoshin from the bolted-down table.
This is as close as I can bring us, monsieur.
The Nichtren finessed the hover down to a landing.
Close enough.
Jaframel leaned down slightly, peering out of the observation bubble. There was nothing out there but snow, rock, and a sheer cliff face going straight up. It looked damn cold.
Someone is certain to be watching. At the very least, let us come with you. Or leave her here with us. If they...
Nobody's leaving me anywhere. I've had enough of being left with you to fill me to the back teeth.
If the prince catches her here, he'll kill her. Especially now that she's free of the...
Van caught himself.
He's already had his chance to kill me, kid. Besides, he still needs me as bait, whether I've got that thing in me or not.
Tianza's fingers flicked, going through procedural cooldowns to keep the hover landed, but ready to take off again at the slightest notice. Jaff clasped his hands behind his back.
She is Hedera. The knife was made for Hedera's hand. Demonkin cannot tolerate the thing. Even a fallen cannot, for long. It is best she accompanies me for that reason alone. All is well, Van.
My lord? Who knew about Zephyrmel?
As far as I am aware, I am the only one who suspected. The prince left the matter in my hands. That was of the time when he was certain of my loyalty.
When did that stop?
When I fell.
Jaff's coat fluttered once in the stillness.
I shall need the item I left in your care, McKinley.
Yes, my lord.
McKinley strode away, disappearing at the far end of the main cabin, heading for the cargo bay. Tian's half turned in the pilot's chair.
Monsieur, I may accompany you?
Thank you, Tian's. I require only my Hedera.
Jaframel half turned, his gaze sweeping across the cabin and fetching up against Leander, who hunched in a chair, staring out a low porthole at a waste of ice and rock falling away from the narrow sloped shelf we were precariously perched on. The necromance glanced up, a flash of fear in his dark eyes. I knew what it was like to feel that frightened of a demon. How could I ever forget?
Distract him, Danny. Let's get this show on the road.
It looks goddamn cold out there. Where are we going?
The entrance is very close.
The color drained from Leander's face, and his emerald spat a single nervous spark. My fallen still didn't turn to look at me.
The cold will not touch you.
I wanted his attention on me.
There's nothing up here. This is a Freetown Tibet historical zone. It's Chumalungma, for fuck's sake. They wouldn't let anyone build
a... It is older than your kind, my curious.
He turned away from Leander.
Come, if 'tis to be done, best it were done quickly.
I didn't know you were a student of the classics, Jaff.
We descended the ladder. The cargo bay was dark, lit only by Oranflu and stacked with crates of supplies. I caught sight of a pile of ammo boxes while I shrugged into the coat Van had handed me. An explorer's canvas number with plenty of pockets, slightly too big for me and smelling too new to remind me of Jace's old coat with its Kevlar panels and the hole-in-one pocket. I'd lost that one, with everything else except my bag and jewelry, in hell. Strange that I should suddenly want, with surprising fierceness, a battered, sweat-stained old jacket, I'd worn Jace's coat at the end of the Lord's Hunt, and for a long time afterward, while the ghost of his scent wore out of the tough fabric.
I want it back.
There was only one thing in a long list that I wanted back. I stuffed 2 fresh ammo clips into the biggest right side pocket, thought about it, and added another one in the left.
You never can tell.
McKinley handed over a small cylindrical iron container, darkly stained and reeking of demon.
Are you sure you want to use this?
What better time?
Jaff's tone was just amused enough to put me on edge.
Dante?
Right here.
Thank you, McKinley. Inform Chas and Van that we shall only be a short time and to keep our transport ready.
Yes, my lord.
McKinley gave me one last dark look and hurried toward the ladder leading up to the main hall. Jaffermel's back was to me as he triggered the side hatch from the cargo bay. The lens of the hatch opened, climate control seals shimmering into life. The seals bowed a little, stabilizing, and I clenched my jaw to equalize the pressure in my ear canals. Jaffermel stared out through the seals for a moment, his face set as if he was contemplating a complex but not particularly challenging riddle.
What's in the box?
Only a demon artifact. It will draw attention, but for a short time, it is the best protection we can use. Do you trust me, Dante?
You're asking me that now?
Of course I trust you. Why? Are you planning something that might change that?
Again?
Perhaps. I must warn you, it is likely the escaped androgyne will show her hand. I may have to act without regard for your conscience.
The darkness thickened as the hover's landing lights switched off. Now there was only starshine and the Aranflu strips inside the cargo bay.
You mean you might have to kill Doreen's daughter? Or take her back to hell no matter what I have to say about it? Don't make me choose between you and Eve, Jaffermel. I can't.
Is Lucifer going to show up too?
I didn't expect myself to sound so calm at the thought. I also didn't expect the thick, choking flare of panic that went through me, pulse hiking, copper coating the back of my palate.
I most sincerely hope not.
He turned slightly, his eyes coming to rest on me. He looked about to say more, but stopped, his mouth thinning into a line that turned down at the corners, even as his eyes paled, their glow less awful than Lucifer's, but still. My heart lodged in my throat, beating thick and quiet.
Uh-huh. I most sincerely hope not, too.
I hefted my sword, its slim weight reassuring.
Let's get this over with. The sooner we have the other half of this goddamn thing, the sooner we can kill that bastard.
Then come. Stay close and fear nothing.
I can do about half of that, Jeff. I think. If Eve doesn't show up, and if the devil doesn't know we plan to kill him.
The cold was immense, titanic, walloping all the breath out of me in one shocked second before Jaframel's aura closed harder over mine, flushing me with heat. Ice congealed in my lungs. Before I blew out a cloud that immediately flashed into ice and fell on the packed snow. I sank in powder-dry snow to my knees. A terrific spike of glassy pain sank through my head before my body adapted to the lower oxygen load in the air. A hazy stain of power spreading out in the ambient atmosphere. Steam drifted away from the egg-shaped field covering us both, Jaframel steadying me as I almost toppled, sinking in the snow. Iron-hard fingers closed around my upper arm, hauling me up. And I found myself balanced on the thin top crust just like Jaframel, whose boots rested feather-light, leaving no impression. It was a nice trick, but such a casual use of so much power was terrifying in an all-new way. I looked up to find Jaff studying me, the wind covered any sound I might have made. The scar in the hollow of my left shoulder flared with soft heat, stroking down my body just like a caress. Jaff tilted his head slightly, and I took an experimental step when he did. His fingers tightened, my boots leaving an impression a quarter inch deep. I took another step. Panic bubbled up. I set my teeth against it. Anyone coming behind us would look at my tracks and think I was alone, stepping lightly over powdery snow deep enough to swallow me, even if it had afforded a soft landing to the hover. Jaff's hand on my arm gentled, slid up to circle my shoulders. He pulled me into his side, power cloaking us both, and I had the sudden, startling feeling of being invisible. The psychic static of a demon, spreading through the ether with black diamond-spangled haze, cloaked and outshone me completely. It was the equivalent of not being able to smell my own pheromones, disturbing and comforting in equal measure. He set off, shortening his long strides to mine, and we moved over the snow together. We headed straight for the cliff face.
Is he going to take us right up that sheer ice-laden wall? Can he? Maybe spreading his wings and catching the wind?
The cliff loomed, a trick of angularity making it wave-like, as if rock and stone might crest over and crush us. Jaframel aimed us for a sharp spear digging itself into the side of the mountain, a slender black stone the wind had scoured clean, wet, and glassy in the eerie, snow-reflected light. I shivered, though I was nowhere near cold, and his arm tightened.
That type of rock doesn't belong here.
We drew closer. My nape prickled, uneasy. Next to the sharp black stone, a deeper darkness beckoned. It was a slim crevice in the stone, festooned with clear, sharp icicles. Jaff kept going. The crevice looked smaller than it was, dwarfed by the massive bulk of the mountain. It was actually large enough for both of us to slide in, despite the sharp teeth. His stride didn't alter. He walked right up to the vertical mouth and maneuvered us in, and with two more steps into the darkness, the wind fell off as if cut by climate seals. The blackness thickened. I tried to hang back, slow down, but he pulled me forward, his arm gently irresistible.
No, not into the dark. It's too dark.
One
more step.
His aura hardened, slashing the blackness with diamond claws, and the night slid aside, crimson lights spiking through its torn coat. Light struck across my adapted eyes. I flinched, and Jaff steadied me as the shielding I hadn't even seen from outside snapped back out behind us, a wall of glaucous, rippling black. Displaced air ruffled my hair, fingered my coat, and finally swirled away.
Holy shit.
It is a sight, is it not? No mere human has seen this, and precious few demons. Welcome to the roof of the world, my curious.
We stood on a platform of smooth, glassy red rock. The cavern was so immense, even the great bloody light couldn't fill its corners or its true height. A thin, arching bridge of the same glassy redness poured away from our perch, its geometry just a fraction off. And that fraction hammered into my midriff, turning my stomach over hard. It was unquestionably demon work. Three other bridges slung inward from the circuit of the cavern, and their goal and apex was a massive crag of floating rock. Its bulk hung down, and as I stared, trying to figure out the physics of something so vastly unreal, it drifted a little bit. It actually moved, and when it did, the bridge nearest us made a low sound that threatened to turn my bones to jelly. The air was full of heat, sudden and shocking after the frigid waste outside. But this heat wasn't human. It mouthed my exposed skin with fierce chill, and my throat closed as I tried to backpedal, my body wiser than I was. Panic rose, beating in my head with jagged-edged wings. I struggled to get free of his arms, because it was hot in there. So hot it burned, and I had felt a close cousin to that heat before. In hell.
Stop.
Down to my knees, I jolted, Jaframel's hand still at my shoulders.
Dante, stop. You will harm yourself.
I blinked up at him. For one horrifying second, his face was a stranger's. Only the green eyes searing and his lips drawn back. I remembered. Claws sneaking against my ribs, cradling the living beat of my heart. A sort of fire in my vitals, and a voice deadly soft and, oh, so amused.
There is more than one way to break a human.
Jeffamel clapped his hand over my mouth, the scar on my shoulder suddenly red-hot wire digging into vulnerable flesh. The human darkness behind the green flame of his eyes returned, drowning me.
You know me. You know me, Hedera. Come back.
My teeth locked together and muscles turned to bridge cables, straining against his hold. Still, there was a curious comfort. I did know him. How many times had he repeated the same thing over and over, while I shook and sobbed with the echo of psychic rape tearing through my head? The hunt for Kellerman Lords had left me with nightmares and reaction flashbacks. None as intense as this, but frightening enough. I did know him. All the way down to my bones. He was so careful not to hurt me. He took his hand off my mouth. I bent over, fingers locked around the slim, comforting length of my sword.
Anubis. Anubis Ederka. Seta Ukvet Sateva Pukurav.
Hot water scorched my eyes, and I looked up to find Jaframil still there, still holding me. Tears trickled hotly down both my cheeks.
I'm okay.
Jaff's silence was eloquent enough to pass for speech, and it was a relief to find I could understand at least this one little silence of his. It meant he didn't believe me in the politest of ways, and wasn't going to press the point. His face was set, that human darkness very close to the surface of his glowing eyes. His mouth was a thin line, one corner slightly corked, one of his winged eyebrows elevated too. My heart leapt, banging against my ribs and pulling the rest of my chest with it.
Gods above, I just had a panic attack and I think I'm having cardiac arrest right now.
We should be quick. I would not ask it of you, but...
I'm all right. I was suddenly very aware of a hollowness inside me. I was starving.
Fine time to get the munchies, sunshine.
Jaff pulled me up, held me steady, and indicated the floating rock. It shifted again, and another bridge took the stress.
Up there. This is a place between your world and hell, not fully of either. Tread carefully.
How careful can I be? I've got a head full of C-19 and Vastin, and someone's got their finger on the detonator circuit. Problem is, I can't tell who. I don't think it matters.
Jaframel smiled.
Let's get this over with.
I eyed the bridges and the chunk of floating rock, my brain struggling with the sheer scale. There was nothing to compare it to, so it seemed absurdly in proportion. But my eyes would snag on the delicacy of the glass bridges and recoil in self-defense.
Are you sure it's here?
He didn't answer, just set off for where the closest bridge met with our platform, his arms settling over my shoulders again as if it was designed to. The bridges looked absurdly frail compared to what they held, that chunk of stone, but they were wide as two hover lanes and twice as thick.
Oh, dear gods, do I have to? I've never been afraid of heights, but this... there's no handrails.
The bloody glow painting the cavern flared, a wash of crimson light like a silent explosion. Jaff's steps quickened as he led me onto the bridge. It was a steep slope and slippery. The surface was grainy with a slightly oily grit feel. I blinked several times, furiously, because we didn't so much walk as almost, I don't know, blink along the curve. Jaframel's arm steady and warm over my shoulders. The hunk of rock would shift and one of the bridges would cry out in pained stress. It didn't seem to take very long to reach the sharpest curve of the bridge, and from there it was a matter of seconds before we stepped from the glass onto something soft. The surface of the central rock was matted with dark dryness. Awful, icy heat touched my cheeks and knuckles, white clenched around Futoshin's hilt and scabbard.
Screw the wooden knife. If Lucifer shows up, we are going to see how much steel he can eat.
It was a ruined city. Jagged, broken towers pierced the red sky, a cobbled road rising from the dirt in front of us. Shattered walls scattered, glowing sickly pale in the bloody light. They had probably once been beautiful, luminous white stones interlocked with care and precision. But now they leered. Even broken as it was, the city held an echo of something lovely. The ruins sang, each with its own silent voice. A chorus of sorrow.
Sekhmet Sayas. What the hell is this?
This is the white-walled city where the Inankinel would bring their brides. I was here once, long ago. I do not think the stones have forgotten. Come.
I've been in plenty of places and seen lots of urban decay. It was still eerie to walk on a road with missing cobbles and see broken buildings with just a breath of demon oddity to their shape. Dry, blasted places that might have once been gardens. Fluid piles of white stone that might have been fountains but were now only dry bones. Every building leaned hopelessly on its foundations, crying out for something lost. Every missing cobble was a hole in my own heart. Jaframel removed his arm from my shoulders to help me scramble over piles of rubble. We were heading, near as I could figure, for the city's heart. He seemed to know his way, only pausing every now and again to look at a particular building as if taking his bearings. Sephramel's half of the knife hummed in its sheath, the sound working through leather and into my hip. I eyed each building nervously. Every stone worked fluidly into its fellows except where some unimaginable force had torn them apart. I kept glancing up at Jaframel's face, set and quiet.
What is it like for him to walk through here again? Are scenes of murder and screaming replaying in his head? Are all of them like the illustration in the book I carry even now in my hell-smelling messenger bag?
The strangest thing in the world happened. I began to feel sorry for him. I never had before. It took a while. The place ran with subaudible song. A long, slow moan of stress that alternated between nostalgia like a sharp knife and memory like a fist to the gut. The psychic imprint of something horrible trembled in the air, and I was glad of Jaframel's aura over mine. This physical space was haunted. Had never been drained by a cadre of hegemony-trained scions. And even though we've come a long way in the science of using power and sorceress will, I didn't know if there were scions alive capable of dealing with this kind of carnivorous reverberation in the ether. It could eat a reader alive or tip a skinland dirt witch into berserker rage. It might even drive a Sedain healer mad. And a magi? Forget it. The spice of demons hanging in the air would tempt them, and the devouring grief would creep into their heads, replicating like a virus, a psychic cancer. My battered shields, mending only because of the steady flushes of power from Jaframel's mark on my shoulder, quivered. I was aware now of the extent of the damage soaking down through my psyche, huge gaping holes and fault lines. We paused for a few moments by a waist-high wall. On the other side, a blasted space that might have once been a garden lay, dead trees crumbling to dust. Jaframel stared across it for a moment, his face settling deeper against its bones. I put out my hand, blindly, closed my fingers around his arm.
Don't.
His expression didn't change, but the hurtful tension in it eased a fraction.
It was so long ago. I still remember each of them.
The Hedera?
All of them. Each life the prince ordered me to take. I keep them here.
One elegant golden finger tapped at his temple.
We're very close now.
I pulled on his arm.
Jaff.
Hey. He didn't look at me. His eyes narrowed as they swept the crumbling garden.
We should hurry.
Hey.
I tugged on his arm. His gaze swung down, touched mine.
Come here.
I'm here.
I pulled him close and slid my arm around his waist. Hugged him as hard as I could, squeezing. He hugged me back. A slight, careful pressure, before freeing himself with exquisite gentleness. His face had eased a little. We set off through the ruined city again. The streets smoothed out, widening into an avenue that dumped us into a huge plaza floored with more red glass stone. Here, the light was brighter, but deeper in shade, heart's blood instead of arterial flow. In the middle of the plaza, a massive building lifted, bone-white marble glowing along its pillared front. Its walls were full of grief and power, and I stared, forgetting to move forward until Jaffermel, not unkindly, pulled me along. It's a temple.
It wasn't built for one of your gods.
A demon god?
No. This was a place to celebrate what we could become. The Ananchimel spoke blasphemy to the rest of us. This was where that blasphemy bloomed. When I came here, it was as a fire comes to cleanse. This was not just a place for Hedera and Fallen. Others were brought here. Humans who showed promise and taught. They were given many gifts, which they took outside to the world. Lucifer flatters himself that he allowed it to bring humans up from the mud. The first products of the unions between your kind and mine were born here. Later, an Ananchimel would take a Hedera away to give birth in secret. They had good reason.
I knew about this. There was a chance that a Hedera could give birth to an androgyne, a demon capable of reproducing, which would pretty much destroy Lucifer's monopoly on reproduction in Hell. It was a big deal to demons. After all, the devil had wound me up and sent me after Santino, who had merrily absconded with the means to experiment genetically until he performed the biggest hat trick of all, making Eve. Eve, the child I hadn't been able to save. Little girl all grown up and making trouble. Were all of them women?
There were stories about males. Hederos. I saw none.
Okay. So, why only women? The bloody light exploded again, soft crimson lapping at the air. I flinched.
The human female breeds, my curious.
That's why Lucifer killed them, you idiot.
Oh.
You know, I'd give just about anything to go back to the hover now.
I tried to speed up, but Jaff kept us to the same even pace. For a demon in such a hurry, he wasn't moving very quickly, just steadily.
How long has it been since someone walked here? Do I want to know?
There was no dust, but plenty of the dry, sterile red dirt, and the way the place shook wasn't conducive to dust settling.
Where are all the bodies?
I added that to the list of questions I could live without answering. The longer I lived, the more of those there seemed to be. The temple's steps sloped up, some of them broken and cracked. I kept my sword in a white-knuckle grip, tried to ignore the way my hands were shaking.
What if Lucifer shows up? No, that's ridiculous. Jeff wouldn't bring me here if he seriously thought the devil would appear.
He was just being cautious.
Yeah, right, sunshine. Tell me another one.
No matter how hard I strained, I suspected I wouldn't be able to hear whatever Jaff was hearing, or trying to hear. It was the same look he'd worn in Toscano, keeping to himself the fact that the devil was asking for me, playing for time to let me heal.
Something's about to happen. I have just enough precog to warn me right before I step into quicksand up to my neck, not nearly enough to stop me from sinking.
Closer to the top, the steps were deep and riven. It looked like someone had taken a plashammer to them in several places, marble crushed and ground to pebbles by resonance harmonics. We reached the top and I hopped onto the porch. The pillars were chipped but otherwise whole, marching along the front of a building big enough to house a whole fleet of freight transports.
Typical demon. Build everything so huge it's unbelievable. I wonder what they were compensating for.
There were five doors. The central one, largest and holding two shattered slabs of marble that once had been able to close. The last door on the left was closed. Marble writhing with carving I didn't want to look at. The other three smaller doors were in varying stages of brokenness.
Keep the knife ready,
No worries about that. The panic died. My left thumb caressed the sword's guard, ready to click the blade free. I could draw, drop my scabbard, and yank the wooden knife free of its sheath if I was given half a chance.
There's no way I'm facing a demon without good honest steel in my hand, no matter how powerful the demon rot thing at my hip is.
Which door?
I'll take the demon behind door number 3, Martin.
It matters little.
He indicated the largest.
If we were here before the city was broken, this would be the door I brought you to. At least the first time. There would be a celebration and sacrifices to mark the occasion.
You were here?
Know thine enemy is not only a human proverb, my curious. Some few demons came here to learn and to watch.
Learn what?
How to fall. Come.